This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Live and Learn. I'm Chua Entik. 2 weeks ago, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump announced his intention to withdraw the U.S. from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement.
On trade, I am going to issue our notification of intent to withdraw from the Trans-Pacific Partnership, a potential disaster for our country. Instead, we will negotiate fair bilateral trade deals that bring jobs and industry back onto American shores.
So the Trans-Pacific Partnership, or TPP, is a regional trade deal involving 12 countries representing 40% of global economy. Firdaus Rosli, a fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, or ISIS, is here to explain what the death, seeming death of the TPP means for Malaysia. Firdaus, welcome.
Hi, Hentik. How are you?
Good, good. So is that a fair characterization? Is it fair to say the TPP is as good as dead?
In my opinion, well, the TPP is dead politically, but it's not dead yet, technically, because until and unless the new president come into power and issue that notification of intent to withdraw from the TPP, then we will see a real death of the TPP. But it seems like right now it's going towards that direction, that it's more of a slow death rather than, you know, like a real death yet.
Because you were working very... You had direct involvement in this deal, in the studying, I think the feasibility study when it was being in the negotiation process. What went through your mind when you saw that video?
My first reaction was wow, because one is that I didn't expect Donald Trump to issue that kind of notification even before coming into office, and secondly, you know, because Trump is not a politician. He's more of a businessman rather than a politician. And the fact that, you know, he can say whatever he wants to say without, you know, and get away with it, literally, in many instances. And it caught me by surprise to say that, to see him issuing such such announcement.
So his predecessor, or the current president, Obama, has been championing the TPP for the past few years. In fact, it is his brainchild since his pivot to Asia. And here is what he had to say.
Without this agreement, competitors that don't share our values, like China, will write the rules of the global economy. They'll keep selling into our markets and trying to lure companies over there. Meanwhile, they're going to keep their markets close to us. That's what's been going on for the last 20 years. That's what's contributed so much to outsourcing. That's what has made it easier for them to compete against us. And it needs to change. With this Trans-Pacific Partnership, we are writing the rules for the global economy. America is leading in the 21st century. And those who oppose passing this new trade deal are really just accepting a status quo that everyone knows puts us at a disadvantage.
So it seems very straightforward. For those who didn't follow the U.S. presidential elections, all 2 years of it, why is Trump against it? If you could, I guess, briefly summarize his position.
He's been here and there when it comes to trade. He has often said that he's pro-trade. He's never been anti-trade. But he is seemingly very against the TPP, you know, due to the fact that the TPP will export jobs to other countries but the United States. But I think all in all, first of all, I have to make this point that it is not something new for the U.S. to make this kind of drama, if I could put it. Because if we look at in the past, whereby, you know, trade deals are often concluded near to an expiry of something. Before this, in 2007, multiple trade deals were concluded with South Korea, for example, just before the Trade Promotion Authority expires at midnight. And that also put us, Malaysia, in a very difficult position back then, because we had to call on various issues that seemed to be very onerous for us to take on back then. because we didn't have a proper leadership back then to say that, okay, guys, we have to look for this one and this is the way forward for Malaysia.
This is during the TPP negotiations.
Before that.
The free trade.
During the bilateral agreement between Malaysia and the United States.
Okay.
And, you know, we had to make that call, you know, whether to go on with the bilateral FTA or to conclude the negotiation, you know, altogether and sign the agreement, consequently. But we choose not to, because we think that it was very too much for us to deal with at that point of time. So we had to put that in the back burner. So come along the TPP. And when the TPP came in about 2008, we came into the TPP through, you know, because of various factors, three factors, in fact. Number one, with the fact that we don't have an FTA, or rather an existing kind of formal engagement with Peru, Canada, Mexico, and more importantly, the United States as our traditional trade and investment partner. And secondly, you know, because of the entry of Vietnam into the TPP, that put us in a very difficult spot, because if Vietnam can get this agreement through, then we will lose out to another emerging economy, another neighbor of ours, and another, you know, another member of ASEAN, in fact. And thirdly, on top of the fact that we had to move ahead because of the competitive advantage, or rather to maintain our competitive advantage, we also have to get into the TPP to have a top-down reform approach to, you know, how we do things today. For example, we have, you know, like I mentioned before, we have an ETP, GTP, and National Transformation Program, but those seem to be very slow indeed, and not only they are slow, they are very much ineffective in cleaning up this excess baggage that we have for decades long. So the top-down approach, or rather the top-down reform via the TPP, will ensure that we will, one, get rid of this excess baggage, as I mentioned. These excess baggage are in the form of government procurement, state-owned enterprises, labor, among others. Yeah? And secondly, it is to conform with whatever reform that we do here with the global standards. And I think that is also important because, you know, there's no point for us to, you know, move ahead with reforms if it divert very far away from what we seem as a global standards.
So Trump in that video said that he prefers to do bilateral trade deals with on an individual basis with other countries. And I got two questions for that. One is, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't the United States the biggest trading partner with Malaysia? Our biggest trading partner is the US. And if that is so, why haven't we come up with a free trade agreement? And two is, how would this a free trade agreement with US benefit be more beneficial to Malaysia?
Not the US, but our biggest trading partner from the members of the TPP is in fact Singapore, I'm not entirely clear about what he meant exactly about going bilateral, and you know, and to stop TPP and going on bilateral, because to me at least, the TPP is in fact a bilateral deal all compressed into one. Like in trade and goods, for example, we have a separate schedule for, you know, all different countries in the TPP. But there are other areas which we don't have such schedules, such as services, for example, where we all of our list in Annex 1 and Annex 2 are all open to everyone in the TPP. It's not country-specific. But if Trump were to go ahead with a bilateral deal, or rather to stop the TPP, or rather to withdraw from the TPP and go ahead with a bilateral deal, then he will have to choose which country will go first, because you can't negotiate with all 12 countries or other 11 countries altogether, because it will be just like another TPP in a different bottle. See? So, you know, who will be the first ones that he will choose from? Will it be the big economies such as Japan or the NAFTA countries, Mexico and Canada. And it seems like Malaysia is not one of the priority ones, at least in my opinion, for Trump to go ahead with this, saying that, okay, we will do a bilateral deal with Malaysia. I don't see that happening in the future.
So I know this is not your specialty, but in terms of geopolitics, does it not look like the fact that America is withdrawing from Asia-Pacific and that it leaves a void for China to fill, which is would be anathema to Trump?
Well, I wouldn't be able to answer that directly, though. But what I can say is this. Number one is that what Obama said, you know, not having the TPP means they do not have a chance to create the global trade rules for the future. Like if you see under the TPP, you have a standard legal chapters, you know, like preamble, final provisions and all that. And then you have traditional trade issues, which is market access, services, investment and all that. But the new issues that is being put in place under the TPP, like the state-owned enterprises, labor, environment, those are real new issues as far as FTA is concerned. So in the case of Malaysia, we don't have that yet in any of our FTAs. So if I don't think that it will leave a void, or rather leave a room for other mega power to take the leading role and create the trade rule for the future. Because if you look at RCEP, for example, nobody's leading RCEP as at today, even China. Because I don't think it's in their interest to lead RCEP per se. I would probably imagine that they would probably want to lead more in terms of AIIB, the One Belt, One Road initiative, but probably not so in terms of trade. And even if they do, it will probably more on tariff liberalization rather than anything else. But this is beyond trade. This is about how you conduct your business, how trade is supposed to be conducted among member countries. These are new issues and future issues for countries to deal with.
RCEP, for those who the uninitiated, is the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, and it's a China-led trade deal involving 16 countries with 50% of the global population, 30% of global GDP, and 25% of global trade. We'll talk more about that after we take a short break. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn. I'm Chua Entik. Firdaus Rosli is here. He is the fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies. We are talking about the status of the TPP. It seems to be dead with the Trump releasing a video on Facebook, his preferred method of communicating with the public through social media, that he will signal, he will ask his advisor to send a letter with the intent of withdrawing from the TPP on his first day in office. And we've been talking about the implication of this, but Firdaus, if indeed this promise is carried out on his first day, January 21st, what would it mean for Malaysia? What can we do going forward?
Okay, let me paint this scenario. There are three possible scenarios here. Scenario number one, U.S. issued a notification of withdrawal and officially withdraws from the TPP. So now who is going to lead the TPP? If it's indeed the largest economy in the TPP, without the U.S., would probably be Japan. So if Japan were to carry this forward, then what kind of TPP are we looking for? Are we looking at post-US withdrawing from the TPP? So it will probably be a clean slate kind of free trade agreement, because many countries come to the negotiation table with an aim to have a US as a trading partner. In the case of Malaysia, if the US is not in there, then we'll probably have to look into our overall package and see that, and you know, try to pick and choose which one we should like to put on the table and others. Scenario number two is that the US will go bilateral, and as I said before, I don't think Malaysia is one of the first few countries that the US will approach for a bilateral trade agreement with, due to various reasons, and I think it's going to, you know, the the end game for us is what are we going to do next about not being a or not having an FTA with the US. Or third, which is very unlikely, which is Trump backpedals and say that, okay, we will have an FTA called the TPP with 12 countries, but let's renegotiate the whole thing. Very unlikely scenario, but it could happen. So now what it means for Malaysia is it's not so much what the US will do, it's about what we will do with whatever that we have already on the table. So the Minister of Trade, Minister of Tokpa, has said that we will probably go ahead with the things that we have agreed on. So I'm not sure if it's going to be like a total package in the sense that, you know, things like state-owned enterprises, GP, government procurement and all that is going to be put on the table and reform in total. But just the thought that Malaysia will go ahead with whatever that we have already agreed on is actually a plus sign, in my opinion.
I think the Japanese Prime Minister has come out and said that it would be meaningless for the 11 remaining countries to proceed without the US consumer market for them to tap into. And I think you kind of touched on that as well. But you also said New Zealand is a crucial player in this.
Yeah, New Zealand is a crucial player in this because they are the depository of the TPP, which means that they currently act as if they are the secretariat of the TPP. So if, you know, like what we heard this morning, that Prime Minister John Key, you know, is resigning from his post, then we don't know what sort of a future is going to be like in terms of New Zealand's participation in the TPP. But I think there are a lot to see in future, at least, because countries are beginning to be more inward-looking as far as trade is concerned. You know, they are very, you know, they are adopting very protectionist approach. Even the political rhetorics are all about what's happening in the home ground rather than the other. And, you know, this is not good for trade in general. Like the Director General of the WTO said that, you know, increasing protectionism is not doing world trade any better. And they have even reviewed the forecast for the whole year of this year to 1.7% of growth. And this is, in fact, the slowest growth in 15 years vis-a-vis world GDP growth. So, you know, we don't know why and how things are moving forward in the future, but I think it's best for us just to keep our options open and see how things will move on, you know, post-20th January.
After 5 years of intense negotiation, what are the lessons from this TPP? Did it set a template or precedent for how major trade deals would be formulated going forward?
I think there are a couple of lessons learned from the TPP, at least from Malaysia's point of view. Number one is that when it comes to a plurilateral kind of agreement, there must be a leader, and that leader will have to be a big country. Like in the case of the TPP, it has always been the United States to push for conclusion, you know, deadlines after deadlines. And in fact, one round to another were done in a span of 1 month or less. You know, so that gave a lot of pressure for member countries to, you know, to keep the momentum going, as well as to ensure that this thing is not running out of steam especially when you deal with, you know, hard issues. Then it is also about the template for the future. What sort of trade would you like to see in the world in the future? Like, would you like, you know, a state-owned enterprise to arbitrarily decide what they want to do in your domestic market as well as in the foreign market, where you as an investor will feel, you know, very much sidelined with the fact that, you know, they have a huge backing behind them, and companies or rather investors don't have that luxury. And, you know, in terms of government procurement, whereby the government will continue to set the price players, whoever they like, and with the current arrangement under the TPP seems like there's a proper threshold, there is a value, and there's a proper rules and disciplines governing from advertisement all the way until the award of contract. So, but we would like also, what is interesting to me is that FTAs has always been about building block approach. It's about countries agreeing to a set of rules or disciplines and say that, okay, we are all set to go to the next level, next stage. And then they go. And it seems to be very slow. But under the TPP, it's all about clean slate. A big country comes and say, this is what the future looks like. We start here. And it sets a very different kind of negotiation altogether, because with a so-called clean slate approach, we tend to learn new things very fast. Like in the case of Malaysia, we didn't know how to deal with when it comes to IP, for example, and government procurement. You know, what sort of rules do we put in place? And state-owned enterprises, we don't know, you know, what threshold to start with, who to open up to. And we learn quite a bit from this process, at least from the TPP's experience. So I think in the future, it has to be a country with a lot of experience, at least. And not just experience in negotiation, but also experience in being abroad and coming up to the table and say that, you know, this is how the future looks like.
I was wondering, could you maybe give like one example of how this learning was, example of how this learning can be beneficial? Like you mentioned a few just now. If you can give like one, okay, I guess, tangible example.
Okay, let me start like perhaps like ASEAN. It started off as ASEAN Free Trade Area, AFTA. And, you know, we have six countries that, you know, that has agreed to move forward with tariff liberalization, and another four with a slightly longer tenure for liberalization. Once that done, they said, okay, let's go for another external partner. They go for China, Korea, Japan, Australia, New Zealand, and India. And once that done, you know, they said, okay, let's go for another step, which called the RCEP. Initially, before RCEP came into the picture, ASEAN and its member and its dialogue partners were unsure whether to go on a plus three approach or plus six approach. Plus three means Japan, China, Korea, and plus six means all six FTA partners. So it was decided that it would go on a plus six approach, but with Indonesia as the leader of the ASEAN pact, at least. But it has lost steam because, you know, we have a new president, an Indonesian president. So there's no apparent leader as far as RCEP is concerned. So the steam has just pretty much died after that, really. And now it's very much on an autopilot kind of mood as far as RCEP negotiation is concerned. And it's, like I said, you know, it's a building block approach, you know, step by step, one after another. But in the TPP, they said, no, you know, let's forget about the P4 template. You know, let's use my template instead. And that's what happened.
What is the biggest difference between the TPP and RCEP?
The biggest difference is that RCEP is just a consolidation of FTAs, especially between ASEAN and its member country, dialogue partners. But with the TPP, it's a clean slate. It's about setting the rules for the future that is above and beyond what has agreed upon by most members, even the US themselves. So you have countries who have never heard such a thing called a labor chapter in an FTA. For example, us, Malaysia, and Vietnam. So, you know, it's very new to us because it's not really a trade chapter. It's a discipline chapter. So it's about how you treat your labor, you know, about the right to strike, about freedom of association and all that. So it's beyond trade. It's about how you conduct trade, how you do your business. Whereas RCEP is all about trade liberalization. It's about opening of market. Pretty much that's it. They have new chapters, these new issues, But it is not entirely clear to me about, you know, what sort of shape that will take out from there.
And another alternative that's being mooted is the free trade area of the Asia-Pacific, FTAAP.
Yep.
Is it called FTAP?
Yeah, called FTAP.
What do we know about that at the moment?
It was mooted by China in their APEC year. So what we don't know much about it really, apart from the fact that FTAP will only take shape from existing FTAs that we have. If it's ASEAN plus FTAs, then that would be the foundation of FTAP. If it's the TPP, then it will be that. Or it will be a combination of these two FTAs or more. You know, that will build the foundation for FTAP. But the fact remains that China, for example, will find it very difficult to agree on things that the US will go for, things such as SOE, state-owned enterprises, labor, environment. And I don't think they are ready to go on that route just yet. So FTAP is and will remain as a pipe dream, in my opinion.
So I guess what would you say is the what's the final message here for after this TPP, and would there be another such ambitious trade pact going forward be attempted?
Well, without the TPP, a lot of commenters are saying that there will not be any impact, which is true. There will not be any impact on global trade, but it is not something that is favorable, because no impact means everybody will still be in their comfort zones. There won't be disruptions in the market, so it will still be an average day for most of us. Whereby in the case of Malaysia, we need this for the three things that I mentioned, especially the last one, because we need the top-down reform. Because without the top-down reform, then whatever initiative that we have done over the last 6-7 years will probably be very very low on the impact side. So with the TPP, at least we can see, you know, a lot of shape in terms of Bumiputera rights, government procurement, SOE. And we need that, because we cannot, you know, post 2020 Malaysia cannot be the same as a pre-2020 Malaysia. It has to be a totally different country. We have to put back Malaysia in a proper trajectory, you know, because that's what Vision 2020 is all about. It's about creating a new Malaysia.
Thank you for coming on. I've been speaking to Firdaus Rosli. He's a fellow at the Institute of Strategic and International Studies, and we've been talking about the status or the death of the TPP and what it means for Malaysia. You're listening to Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.